All right. Energy's good tonight, but it is just me and Caden. Come on, get the chair pulled out and get step up to the table. This is kind of a slow time of year for sports. You know what I mean? Like for the big three, we do have the Olympics going on, but for what we really stick to with the NFL, NBA, major leagues, it's a little bit slow. So that's why the pods have been a little bit sporadic. We've also been a little light on our guest list because we've been doing the pods just at completely random times. So that's really slowed down our guest list a little bit. Uncle Clint hasn't been able to join us tonight. He was down at Wrigley, which that's going to be where we start off tonight with the Cubs. With the Cubbies taking 3 of 4 from the Cardinals when they really should have swept them. But so what's coming up on today's show? We're going to talk about some of the Cubs moves. Obviously, Cubs fans know that Morel got traded. We're also going to cover the New York Giants offseason Hard Knocks on HBO Max. Caden watched a little bit of that one with me, but not all of it, but it was pretty interesting. I want to talk a little bit about that program. And then we're going to close with our final piece on travel baseball, where we're talking about the travel organizations themselves, some of the costs, kind of their financial structure, and why I think that they are the element of travel ball that's probably struggling the most, which is why many of the programs are not very good, is because the financial model is a little bit more challenging for them. So those are the things we're going to cover tonight. It's the Sports Life. We're talking sports. Let's go. All right, I'm feeling fired up tonight, but I'm a little bit all over the place. But I feel like we're ready to step up our game with these pods because last time I felt like the energy was a little bit lower than it should be. But again, with Uncle Clint not here to kind of keep us on our toes sometimes, the energy level can be a little bit lower. But also, the Cubs were playing like absolute trash, and now they're starting to turn the corner a little bit. And when I saw that game the other night, I thought that that was the type of game that can just change a whole season. And that's the game where Tauchman hit the walk-off double down the line. They were down, you know, 2 runs going into the ninth. They got a solo shot out of Belly. And then they ended up just stringing some hits together. And it was just the most impressive Cubs win I've seen all year. And I feel like that's the type of win that can flip it for them. And now they come out a night later and they blow a game that they should have won. But again, finishing off this series 3-1 against the Cards, I think it's a big deal. So let's jump and talk about these trades. Let's talk about these moves. I mean, the big thing was the Morel deal. They also traded Leiter, which was a little bit confusing to me because I just don't understand what the Cubs are trying to do. Most of their moves kind of remind me of just like middle market team moves. Like the Morel thing for Paredes. I mean, I get it. I understand the trade. But at the same time, you don't really understand overall, are the Cubs trying to be buyers and make a push for the playoffs? Well, I mean, what is that Morel trade? Like in your eyes as a Cubs fan, Caden, what's the deal with the Morel trade? I mean, Morel's a positive kid. He certainly wasn't any more the reason that they weren't getting the job done than guys like Swanson and other guys like that. So, like, why is he the guy to go?
Well, I mean, I think that he was probably the biggest guy that the Cubs wanted to have, like, a breakout year. Like, let's be honest. We expect a lot from Swanson, but I don't think they were really expecting, like, a huge breakout year. I think Morel was probably the only guy on this team that we were expecting, like, a huge breakout year because of the steps he was taking. Like, the steps that he just continued to grow. The first two years we saw him with, the first year, he was striking out a lot, but he was still hitting home runs, to not playing very good defense, to him kind of finding a spot, to him laying off pitches. And then going into this year, we were thinking, okay, if this guy can play a good third base, which he has, which he did going into last year. And then this year, you know, maybe like see more power and then less strikeouts. And then it just didn't really happen. But like you said, I'm not really sure why they traded for Paredes. I mean, I do like Paredes. I do like him. I mean, I liked him with the Rays. But I'm just not really sure what they really wanted from Paredes instead of what they have for Morel. I mean, they're both very similar. I think they wanted some more consistent power and less strikeouts.
But you know what? You know what? The Rays had really wanted Morel. The Rays wanted Morel last year. They continue to want Morel, and if you look at what happened right away, where's he playing in Tampa? And he's playing second base. And
the second
Cubs,
base?
Yes, and the Cubs just don't have that spot for him. That's where he played in the minors. Uncle Clint used to talk about it. He didn't fit with the long-term vision of the team because of this defensive mindset that the Cubs have, with that middle really being Horner and Swanson. And Morel is not a third baseman. He was not comfortable out there. The Cubs are defensively really sound throughout the rest of the field. I mean, they got the middle infield solved. He's obviously not a first baseman. Their outfield is very good.
I heard Morel was in play. They're going to try him at first.
Well, that's what I'm saying. What I'm saying is, when you got a guy for that many years, he's, you know, in his third full season, and you're trying to bounce around and figure out where you're going to play him, I think that's why they ended up moving him. I just don't think that they were – I hope that he doesn't end up being – my fear is that he ends up being kind of like a Soler, right? Like Soler, we got Wade Davis, I want to say, for Soler. I think that was the trade. We traded Soler to KC for Wade Davis, and Wade Davis worked out pretty well for the Cubs. I mean,
he only had one really good year,
but that's the thing. We kind of traded for a short-term closer for a guy that ended up being a pretty darn good long-term hitter, like Soler did. So that's my fear here, is that, you know, did we trade for a guy that's going to give us maybe a couple good years at third base while Morel's still playing at a high level when he's, you know, 32, 33 years old?
I feel like this was a sign that Jed Hoyer kind of said, like, okay, yeah, we're not going to be buyers, but we're also not going to be sellers. Like, we're going to trade a good guy to get a good, like, to get a powerful guy. And I think I like this trade if we were in a spot where we can, we were in, like, a divisional spot. But because I really think this is a upgrade, because, you know, I feel like
it's an upgrade. Paredes, I agree.
But I'm just not sure, because Paredes is in his prime right now. And so maybe you get a guy that's going to be his prime when the Cubs are competing. But again, this is going to be a guy that can, with the way that he can provide us a lot of power, defensive spark, he can provide a spark to this team. But
got a natural third baseman. The guy's got good power. He hasn't really got it going yet. You
but
know,
again,
in the
Cubs
stages
are winning
here,
games when he's not getting going, which that's important.
It's true. I mean, at the end of the day, I don't mind that. What's your opinion moving on to the lighter deal? Like, what's the thought process there? I mean, why are we letting relief pitchers
Cubs
go?
Got a couple good guys from the lighter deal. I heard the first guy that he's in AAA. He's a right-handed pitcher. He just struck out the side in his Cubs debut. He might be a guy, actually, if someone gets injured, that he might make his debut, because he's in AAA. He looks really good. So I don't really mind it, but I think the Cubs only got two guys. Unless they're really good, I'm not sure. I think the Cubs kind of got scammed out. I heard the Yankees really like Leiter, too. They wanted him last year, too. And Leiter's a guy that he just kind of seems like he's always progressing. Like, every pitch looks like it's getting better. He continues to make adjustments. And he's a guy that he was coming up as a starter, went to the bullpen, just like a lot of guys in the Cubs. I think the Cubs, they get up a lot of guys so they can go in the starting rotation, can go in the bullpen, which that's pretty good. Very flexible guy, especially if you want to trade him. But
their single biggest problem was not being able to hold on to leads, and they traded one of their best relief pitchers.
We have the lowest bullpen.
I don't want to hear about it. It does matter. It matters when you've been winning in over 20 games and you've lost those games.
But the losses late have not been on our bullpens because of our
offense. But I'm talking about the season. I'm not talking about as of 2 weeks or a month or whatever.
Season,
I'm talking about the season. They've been winning in like over 20 games that they've ended up losing. That only happens because of your bullpen.
No, it's because of our offense.
Well,
half the guys that made – there's only one guy.
But here's the thing. Let me explain
this
to you.
There's two guys in the bullpen right now.
When it comes to offense, right, that's not necessarily resolved by trades and moves and all that. That's resolved by getting these guys that are supposed to be hitting to start hitting. And that's what's happening right now, okay? Swanson's starting to put the bat on the ball a little bit.
Pete
Crow Armstrong's starting to put – and you start to see things change. You don't necessarily need to make changes for that. When it comes to not having the arms, you got to go get the arms. I mean, it's not about guys not performing. It's about unproven guys continuing to be unproven, where you got guys with, you know, on the offensive side that can get it going and need to get it going. And like I said, it's still what they need to do right now. And I just hope that this lighter move doesn't end up hurting them by being down an arm, a proven arm, a guy that's been good for them in the pen, and not having it for the rest of the season. I mean, this is the type of league right now where you just have to get in. if you can get in, wild card teams are making pushes into the World Series every single year. The Cubs have really good starting pitching. They're continuing to be really good. They didn't give up any other starters. I just hope that one doesn't come back to bite us.
Yeah, I mean, I'm also confused. That trade kind of felt as like a sell type of trade. But again, the Morel trade kind of seemed like a buy type of trade, because Graves is a guy that can help you right now. But the guys that are in the minor league system the Yankees gave us, they're really good, I heard. But they're not going to help us right now.
Isn't that the Cubs type of move, though, right? They make two moves.
Yeah, but they also
one that looks like buyer, one that looks like
seller.
They
also make another move. There's a guy named Nate Pearson. He's pretty good. They got him from the Blue Jays. He pitched a couple times. He's pretty good. He throws a high he throws like 98. He's got a good, pretty good breaking ball, but he walks a lot of guys. So, but he's pretty good. His MLB debut, I mean, his debut for the Cubs, he got ejected, so it wasn't that the best. He actually had a scoreless inning, then he gave up a home run, then he hit a guy in the head and he got ejected.
Bottom line is, Cubbies right now are giving us something to cheer for. What about the other side of town? What's going on over there?
20 in a row.
20 losses in a row.
I wonder if the announcer's going to say White Sox, South Side, stand up again.
It's getting dangerously close to looking like they may compete for that 40 and 120 Mets team that was the worst in history. I don't know why they were 40 and 120. I want to say maybe there was a couple games they didn't end up playing at the end of the year that were rain, you know, cancellations or something like that. But I got to look in to figure out why they didn't play 162. But the bottom line is, the pace the White Sox are on, that was almost a Freudian slip there. I think I called them the White Sox. But the pace that they're on right now, they could get dangerously close to the worst record ever. This is a team that was built to make a World Series run just a couple of years ago. It's really sad. I don't like the White Sox, but what's happening right now is an embarrassment, and I hope they get it figured out. We're going to move on.
Well, I'm hoping. Well,
Go ahead. What do you got, man? No, you're good.
The Cubs are playing the Sox in a week. I'm really hoping that the Cubs, if the streak is still alive, the Cubs better not blow it.
Well, if we remember the last two games set, the Cubs managed to make a couple of really, really interesting games out of the White Sox.
The Cubs are the best team in the league and the Sox are the worst. It's still going to be a close game because it's just a draw because it's Cubs-Sox.
I almost hope for Cubs' sake, the losing streak doesn't make its way to us, because wouldn't it be fitting that they end their losing streak by beating the Cubs? I mean, I just don't want that to happen. So I hope the Sox get one before they play the Cubs, because I don't want to see.
I mean, it's only. I think they play them on Saturday and Sunday. I think.
So it's a week. So they probably the Sox could easily lose four more in a row. So we'll see what happens. You ready to move on?
Yeah.
All right. Cool. Moving on. All right. Next up, this is something we're going to bring to the show a little bit more, especially when things are a little bit slower in the sports world. You kind of find those little lulls. We're getting close to NFL time, and we're talking about multiple things. Number one is we're talking about the fantasy draft. Uncle Clint just texted me tonight. He's like, I got some good nuggets I want to drop on the pod about fantasy with the drafts coming up. So we're going to get him soon, probably next week on the pod. But the Hard Knocks stuff is just phenomenal. I mean, this was the very first time that Hard Knocks did an offseason. So they started doing – they always did a preseason. Then they did an in-season. And now they did an offseason. And this was heavily based on the scouting room. This was heavily based on the activities of the GM, the assistant GM, the owner, and how the owner's involvement is with the team. It was really cool. So it might be a little bit geared towards the older population, meaning that I'm not sure that back office stuff really gets guys like Caden. Caden, what do you think? Like, just in general, getting in behind the scenes?
Unless the draft. I don't like the draft. I don't like anything
Got it.
Else.
Okay, cool. So yeah, I'll mention that. So the first part of the show really was heavy Saquon. I mean, it was heavy about Saquon Barkley. Again, keep in mind, this is all during the time where the Giants did not know for sure that they were going to lose Saquon. It was a lot about his free agency. It does show the GM on the phone with Saquon's agent talking about his deal, kind of saying like, hey, we could do 12 and a half for three with a, you know, guaranteed cash of $25 million. Like, I mean, he's throwing out numbers. He knew that they were going to go shop. He even called Saquon and told him, like, go see what you're worth out there. They didn't want to franchise him again. It didn't make sense for Saquon. It didn't make sense for the organization. And, you know, to be honest, just to see Saquon in that process, Saquon Barkley just stands out to me as a true pro. He really did. I think he loved being a Giant. I think that if the money was right, he would have stayed a Giant. But ultimately, there was other teams that were able to come to the table with more money that made more sense for that team, like the Eagles, obviously. The owner did say on Hard Knocks that he would lose sleep if Saquon ended up going to the Eagles because it's in the division. And, you know, obviously watching the show, we knew already that that's where Saquon ended up. But that was kind of an interesting part. So the beginning part, the first couple episodes really had a lot of Saquon in it. Then the focus shifted a little bit over to Spider Burns, which that was a big offseason acquisition. They paid Burns from the Panthers big. The interesting part about that was the GM of the Giants and the GM of the Panthers are like best friends. The families hang out together.
Oh, wow.
So, yeah, so like the daughters know each other, the sons know each other. And it was interesting listening to him negotiate with his friend because his friend from the Panthers is trying to make his very first trade. So this was his like first trade as a GM. He's trying to get as much out of the Giants as he can, even up to the buzzer where he's like, he wanted one more seventh round draft pick. And Giants GM is like, no, you know, we both need players. We both need draft picks. I think we've laid out a good deal. Let's just, you know, let's find our middle spot here and let's make this deal happen. They ended up getting Burns. And I think the trade was good for both sides because the Panthers are really in like a rebuilding mode. So that was really cool. So you got to see like the Saquon, you got to see like a key player with the organization going into free agency. Then you got to see a trade, and then we get the Cadence piece. And this is the draft. So the draft stuff was really cool because this shows them leading up to the draft. At one point, they had Neighbors, Harrison Jr., and Odunze in the same room. The Giants invited them to the facility on the same day. They had the wide receiver coach firing questions at them. They were almost like competing with each other, not as much on a physical basis, but on a mental basis in terms of answering questions. It actually shows a scene where they asked the Giants wide receiver coach, they said, right now, if you had to take one of those guys, who you taking? And he said, without hesitation, I'm taking Neighbors. And that included with Harrison in there. And most guys had it, Harrison, Neighbors, Odunze. And so that was really interesting. So again, getting behind the scenes, seeing these conversations after the fact, after the draft, they really fell in love with Neighbors. He was their number one guy. I honestly think when it came to the QBs, they liked Daniels. They might have even moved up for Daniels if they had an opportunity to, because they're not fully sold on Daniel Jones. I think they like Jones, but they think that Jones, with the injuries that he's had and so forth, they're a little bit worried about him. So I think if a move was to be made, they might have tried to make it. But you're right, the draft stuff was pretty cool. Seeing how the Giants led up to that, seeing their room, the conversations they'd have with the kids.
I saw them have a talk with Caleb Williams. I'm not sure why. I think they already knew that Caleb was going to go number one.
They did. Everybody talked to the quarterbacks, guys in the top six. And keep in mind, they knew he was going to go number one. But you never know what these teams are going to do with their picks. There was a period of time where the Bears, you weren't 100% if the Bears were going to try to keep Fields or do something like that. No one knew. Or if the Bears would end up making a move for a veteran. So you don't know for sure when they brought Williams in. You don't know the timeline of that in terms of where the Bears were in their decision-making process. And one thing that you saw from this is that you never know. These teams never show their draft cards, ever. They do not let you know what they are going to do. They were, even though they knew, once they predicted, the Giants staff and a lot of other people predicted the top five picks accurately, where each team was going to go. And they said, hey, if we got Neighbors or Harrison at six, we're turning in our card. But yet, when you watch the show, turning in our card means if we're not even having a discussion, we're turning in our card, we're picking them. Like they turn it their pick card. So they turn in their card saying if at six, either Neighbors or Harrison is available, that's what we're doing. And that was their call. So obviously Harrison was gone, Neighbors was available, but
what if both were available?
I don't know. I don't know what they would have done, but they still don't come off the clock. They don't just turn their pick in right away. They wait, and they took a couple calls. They took calls from the Indianapolis Colts. They were still taking calls. It was really interesting to see this, even though they knew that they were taking Neighbors. And then they ultimately told the Colts and I think the Jets. They talked to a couple different teams, and they just told those GMs, like, we're happy with where we're at. And we're going to go ahead and, you know, we're going to go ahead and pick you know, obviously what ended up to be neighbors. So another interesting thing about this was seeing Daboll. Daboll is, I like him. I like him on the show. I don't like him as much as the Lions coach. I'll talk about him in a second, but I like Daboll. He's got kind of a cool way about him where he's just confident. He kind of knows what he wants. And he mentioned that he talked to Saban. He used to work under Saban. And he worked with Tua. He worked with Hurts. And he talked to Saban about the guys in the draft and kind of said, like, who are the problems? And Saban, who in this draft, like, when you played against these guys, who were the guys that you would be like, man, these guys were major problems? And the two guys that he mentioned were Neighbors, who the Giants already loved. And the other guy was the tight end. Who's the first tight end that went? Bowers. Where was he from? Iowa or something?
Georgia.
Saban mentioned those two guys. He said those are the two guys that wreak havoc on opposing defenses. So I know the Giants were absolutely thrilled, to get Neighbors in that situation. But so cool to see all these big dogs. Odunze, who obviously ended up coming to the Bears. I think the Bears made two awesome top 10 selections. Neighbors look like Odunze looked like he was right in the mix with those other top two guys. He's almost like doesn't look as physically intimidating as Neighbors and Harrison Jr., but man, does he look smooth. He looks smooth. I like it just showed him running his 40. So I think they got a beast. I think all three of those guys are going to be true pros. It'll be interesting to see many years down the line after a team like the Giants had him on film in a room talking to him, which one of those guys ends up being the big dog from that class. But overall, a different vibe, something that I recommend people check out where you're really starting to look at the pro scouts. You're looking at conversations with sports agents. You're talking about GM to GM, assistant GM to GM. It also gives you a little bit of a sneak peek in how to work your way up in the NFL. Now, I couldn't tell you the first thing about how you get a job in the NFL, but you will notice that a lot of these people that have jobs already, they're kind of on an interesting track where maybe you go from a scouting type of role to then you can work your way up to maybe an assistant GM or a head scout and an assistant GM. It kind of shows a little bit of a track. And these people work around the clock. I mean, at certain times a year, especially in the off season when you're dealing with free agency and the draft and scouting and so forth, these people really do put the time in.
Do you have to pay for the thing, the Hard Knocks?
It's on HBO Max, so you have to pay. Yeah, Max is you can do HBO Max as a streaming service where you pay additional per month, or you can have it as an add-on to your cable package or whatever. And the other way you might be able to see it is you might be able to buy it a la carte, like one episode, or buy the series of episodes through Amazon Prime. They do that too, where you can just buy the Hard Knocks series.
So you have to buy Bears one too?
Well, not if you have HBO Max, which we have HBO Max. So that's what's coming next. And that's why I mentioned we will be talking about this on the pod.
People are saying like there's like a training camp. There's like cameras like everywhere that are like Hard Knocks.
We're going to be talking a lot of Bears Hard Knocks. The first episode is this week. So that's going to be awesome. That's going to give us some good content. We're also going to talk about the receiver show on Netflix. I don't know if anybody's had a chance to check that out, but me and Caden been watching that. And it's interesting because with the receivers, they really went with some top guys as opposed to the quarterback one that they did where they went with like the GOAT, they went with the top dog Mahomes, and then they went like good with Cousins, and then they went with like Mariota, and they kind of went, you know, so you had like across the spectrum.
Yeah, it was kind of interesting. It was like showing like personal life, and like it's kind of interesting to see like Kittle like without like a football and stuff, and like Jefferson and stuff.
Right. And then, but with the receivers, they went with like big dogs across the board. It wasn't like the way they did quarterback where they went with like almost like four different journeys. They went with dudes that are top dogs. So receiver, we're going to talk about this. Receiver was Kittle, Deebo Samuel, and obviously Kittle's not a receiver, but he's very interesting to watch. Yeah, Jefferson and Amon-Ra St. Brown. So four really good players, teams that are on different levels because they also did Davante Adams. So you had two guys that didn't make the playoffs with Jefferson and Devontae. So you kind of saw them exit the show a little early, where obviously you saw the other guys stick around because it ended up being the show takes you all the way through the Super Bowl, and you ended up with two of the 49ers there. I was actually just watching the episode where the Lions played the Niners in that NFC Championship, and they kind of blew it. They were up 24-7, I think, at halftime, and they ended up losing. And, man, just watching that, people want to blame the coach on going for it on fourth down, but, man, the players, there was a ball Goff threw right in a guy's hands that he dropped. I mean, they just had moments in that game. There was a big fumble. I mean, it was on the players. It wasn't on the coach. I mean, there were times where he probably should have put points on the board, but watching that back was a little bit gut-wrenching from the Detroit side. I mean, Detroit really, really deserved to win that game the way that they played early, and then they just really let it slip away in the second half. But we can't wait to talk receiver, Bears Hard Knocks, and then I think, I'm just guessing, next season, after the season's over, they're probably going to go running back. And the reason I say that is because they really avoided Christian McCaffrey in this thing at every opportunity they had to show McCaffrey. When they were showing Debo and Kittle, they would not even show a McCaffrey touchdown. And you and I both know how many touchdowns that guy was scoring. So they were very adamant about not involving or showing plays from the running back, not even showing much of C-Mac in the locker room or anything. So I think you're going to see the next special be running back. I don't know if McCaffrey will be on it, but I would imagine he will be, and that will be really cool to see. So again, these shows are fun. They're fun to talk about. If you're not watching them, I do recommend them. They're very well done, and I think Netflix did a genius thing. They kind of ripped off Hard Knocks a little bit. So they went away from, like, they're following a team, we'll follow a position. And they've done it very successfully. Yeah, it's done quality. Yeah, absolutely. You got anything else on that you want to add?
I enjoyed it. I mean, I think Hard Knocks, there's probably more stuff to look at because it's a whole team. But I feel like the receivers, it's pretty cool because, you know, it's focusing on one player. And it's kind of showing not just like their football, like their personal life. It's kind of like interesting by that. But
me and you are going to finish episode 8 on our upcoming vacation here. We'll watch episode 8, and that's the closing one on it. And I think you're right. Taking them behind the scenes, seeing a little bit of the family stuff.
I do think that they probably act a little different knowing that the camera's on them. It's not like they're just like home by themselves and they don't know the camera's on.
Right. Like not playing with the kids. Like, I just got home from the game. You take care of the kids. No, they're like every moment. Like, oh, they're such a good dad.
I guarantee George Kittle's like swearing.
George Kittle's an animal. But he doesn't have kids and stuff. So he's more like him and his wife, more, they seem a little bit more wild. Like, they're still very young. I will say this. If you don't like Kittle.
A lot of wives annoy me.
If you don't like Kittle now, and when you watch the show, you're going to start liking Kittle because Kittle does everything for the team. I mean, Kittle blocks.
Yeah, he seems like a type of guy. I feel like he would be good in the Super Bowl because I'm surprised the Niners haven't won one because he feel like he keeps it loose.
Correct. That dude has an impact on every element of the game.
He's like, if it's like 24-0 and he'll like make like a joke in like the locker room.
He actually, no, you're 100% right. It actually shows him go up to Purdy when they were down 14-0 and he just told Purdy, like, we're going to be talking after the game. How did we look so bad in the first half? We're going to win this game. And we're just going to look back and say, and you saw Purdy talked about it. He's like, Kittle always has a way of like making the guys feel good, making the guys know how good they are. And it even gave Purdy a little bit of confidence going through that game where he said, we're going to laugh about this later and be like, man, we really started this game off bad. So yeah, Kittle's very interesting. He was probably, in my opinion, the most interesting guy that they followed.
I was a little quiet. So like, he was like a little quiet.
I can't wait to talk about him. We'll hold off on this receiver stuff. You're right. He's on the quieter side, but man,
he seems like he's pretty good. Like he's like doesn't get like a lot of trouble or anything.
You're 100% right, man. He's a confident dude. I mean, he's a confident dude. If you get a chance, check out the St. Brown story on HBO's Real Sports. Real Sports did a thing on the St. Brown brothers before they were in the NFL. And it was talking about how this dad, it's their dad, is talking about how he's going to get his boys to the league and how he kind of set things up to get them to the league. And it talked about how he was like the NFL's version of Lonzo. What was the balls LeVar. Guy? Love, yeah. The ball dad. And
that guy's.
Yeah, and when you see they shut him down. The NBA shut him down. They just would not. You don't hear from him anymore. It was either the boys or the NBA said, we don't want to hear from this guy anymore. And you haven't heard a word from that guy in a long time.
He said, like, he was saying, like, crazy stuff, like, Lonzo's, like, the best player in the league or something.
But they both were successful in setting their boys up and giving them the proper resources and saying, hey, these guys are going to make it to the big leagues. And he had a couple boys make the NBA, and St. Brown had two of his sons make it to the pros, and the third one was a D1 player at Stanford. So, I mean, goodness. But if you watch the story, so interesting. The mom was, like, in charge of their education. The dad was in charge of their athletics. The mom taught them multiple languages. They talk about why they kind of have unique names and all this kind of stuff. So if you're interested in that kind of thing, you could probably YouTube HBO Real Sports St. Brown story and check that out. Really awesome. All right, we're moving on. All right, final piece of the three-part travel segment. And keep that volume down. I'm covering this. You can play your game, but I don't want to hear the volume back there. So he does not like talking the numbers when I get into the travel baseball stuff. But I am going to finish it off with a few pieces of advice for parents that are listening with kids that are younger right now, like 10 and under. I'm going to give a little bit of advice. But I did break down kind of how much travel costs in the very first part of this, which was two pods ago, talking about some of the numbers, travel fees, and then additional expenses for special lessons and equipment and so forth. And then I focused on the facilities and how much money they're bringing in and how that system's kind of designed financially. But this was an interesting, and again, I'm breaking very basic financial numbers here, and I'm breaking them down from a standpoint just to try to figure out, like, why are these travel organizations all, they're not very good. They're not super organized. The communication's not the best. And, I mean, you can have a great experience at one, but just in general, they don't seem like quality run businesses. And I'm not putting any one of them down individually. I'm just saying as a group, as a whole, I'm sure there's some outliers that are really, really bad and some that are probably really, really good. But in general, I think the travel programs are a little bit off. And I think these numbers explain that a little bit. So I just took a scenario and I said, let's say you got a travel organization that's running three teams per age group from 10U to 17U. So they're running eight teams. Say they got three teams per year, so they got 24 teams total. And then let's say they got an average of 14 players per team. So if you got 24 teams, you got 14 players a team, you got 336 customers essentially supplying that business money. 336 times an average fee of $3,500 a year is $1,176,000. Now, that sounds like a decent buck. But again, that's the dollar amount of a small company. That's the dollar amount of a true small business. And I think obviously there's extras. There's other things that make these organizations money. And I'm sure they have partnerships and things like that. And maybe I'm missing some of their main revenue drivers through their sponsors and things like that. I'm not really sure, so I can't bring up a full financial statement for one. But again, when you talk about all the activity that takes place in a travel organization with 24 teams across eight age groups, and you end up with, you know, a shade under $1.2 million, and then you start thinking about your expenses. And I just jotted down a few notes, and I'm saying, okay, say you got a handful of full-time guys, you got five full-time employees, you know, you're paying these guys, you know, they're year-round guys, so say they're making $80,000 a year or something like that. That's, you have $400,000 in salary right there. Let's say your rent, I mean, your rent's got to be a big expense. I mean, these guys are in warehouse-type facilities, they're in larger buildings and things like that. I could easily see a rent situation where it's $20,000 a month across 12 months, which would be another $240,000. You also see a scenario where each team has a part-time coach, but it's a professional coach. So it's usually like an ex-college player or a guy that's been around baseball for a long time. I have no idea what those coaches make. I don't think it's much, but it is pretty. They do have to pay them decent because they're traveling. I mean, if I look at this offseason personally, with Caden playing in the 15U age group, we traveled out of town four times, and basically five. One of them was so far away that it was, we didn't stay overnight, but it was basically five times. The coach is on board for that. And these tournaments are Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday type deals. So this is pretty intrusive on a coach's summer schedule, whether they have another full-time job or whatever it is. So I'm thinking, all right, they get to coach for these 2 months, they get $10,000. And you got 24 teams, so you got 24 coaches. That's another $240,000 right there. You figure the team's laying out some money for all the equipment that's within the rental facility. They're also purchasing jerseys. Some of this stuff may come free through the partnerships, but again, you figure that would add another $25,000 to $50,000. Pretty easy to come up with $900,000 to $1 million in expenses, which leaves a pretty slim margin there. So the point being there is that the margin of error in the organizations is small. I mean, they don't really, again, is travel baseball expensive? Yes, it's very expensive. But that doesn't necessarily mean that the structure behind it and that the organizations are really raking in the profits. So my sign here is just that I do believe that the organizations generally struggle with things like communication, things like development, like that you can't see the forest from the trees, right? They start getting focused on, hey, how do we make sure we, you know, can stay above water here with this? And while they're doing that, they're ultimately not really developing kids. They're essentially, you know, maybe shooting for wins, trying to put together, you know, trying to put together a team that's going to give them a good name, a good thing to advertise, a good thing to put on Instagram and so forth. So it's really a broken system top to bottom. And I've went through the numerous reasons why, but I will throw out some advice. And this is just, you know, just a few quick points, and people will not listen to them. I know that because of one of the reasons that I'm going to give advice on. And the first thing I'll say is don't pay for travel ball until after Little League. Really not much benefit to having your kid ruining summers and playing tournaments every weekend at 9U, 10U, 11U. Also, a lot of those kids tend to try to stay in their Little Leagues at the same time. So, you know, they're not making it to most of their Little League games, and then they're trying to just play enough games because they're better players to where they can qualify for districts. It really makes for a bad setup, a bad formula, and it continues from basically 10U, 11U, 12U, where you got all these kids just trying to play enough Little League games to qualify for districts, where obviously their big investment is in travel ball, so they're doing that at the same time. It can also create an environment where a 10-year-old is pitching for a Little League team because he's one of their better players, and then he's also expected to do the same thing back for his travel team. Again, bad formula. In my opinion, I haven't seen a lot of benefit from the kids that have started early. You know, I've seen kids, again, Caden's first year of travel was after Little League. It was the one of a few decisions that I think that I made right. Was to make him wait to play travel until we were done, you know, with that Little League portion of our journey, essentially. And I, like I said, I think that really, really worked out. I think it was smart because I see kids that have been playing travel since 9U and they still have the same bad habits that they had when they were 9 that they have when they're 14 and 15. And that goes back to the development part. Like, how can a kid play 5 years of travel baseball and not have a coach instruct them on, you know, proper placement of their front foot when they're in the batter's box, basic throwing mechanics, things like that? I mean, these are very basic things. If a travel organization is not giving your kids that, what are they giving you other than a bunch of games? So the second thing is be mindful of that travel commitment and the effect on your family. So if you know your kid's an athlete and you know your kid's going to want to play travel baseball, if you're committing to that at 10U, there's a pretty good chance that kid's going to play till probably 15 or 16U. And you're essentially committing to eating up your summers for 6 or 7 years. So the longer that you can push that back and just kind of enjoy more of a low-key baseball journey with some Little League play. Again, Little League's a really cool structure because it allows you to continue to advance if you are good enough. In other words, you will play a lower competitive type of environment during the Little League regular season. And then in Little League, you're going to get to the playoffs and the environment is going to notch up a little bit and you're going to feel a little bit more pressure. And then after your playoff, the best kids are going to move on and go play in some type of all-star, whether it's an all-star tournament against other local teams or whether it is district play where you're going and you're going to try and win your district so that you can then move on and try to ultimately make it to the Little League World Series. So no matter what, it's a structure where you're going to continually be playing a higher level of baseball, but you're kind of advancing through the ranks throughout the year. So you're not forcing it. Like, oh, that's why a lot of people tell me they got to go to travel. Oh, you know, my kid was going to take the first baseman's head off. And I'm thinking, it's okay. It's okay. Let him do that. Let him be the best on that team. But again, through its very natural process, that kid ends up in an environment where he's playing against better players than him, you know, if he's playing on the district level or at an all-star level. So that's kind of a natural progression that you see. And that brings me to another piece of the travel. When you do find that travel program, I would recommend trying to find a travel team that has some league play and then mixes in like a couple tournaments rather than going with a team that does specifically tournaments. The tournament play is fun, but league play to me has just a special value to it. You get league play in Little League. You got leagues like the WSBL. Caden played in a league this year before his travel season that was based on a league structure where there was a playoff. There's just something really cool about that. And you're not trying to win. Like if you look at his league play where they made a run in the playoffs, ultimately lost in the championship, versus what you see on a weekend where you have to win 7 games in 3 days to take down a, you know, travel baseball tournament. Once you get into the high school ages, you got to win that many games. In the younger years, it's maybe 3 or 4 that you got to win, but or 5. But when you get to the high school level, it's like 7 games just across 3 or 4 days. So it's really, I mean, that's not baseball. That's not natural. Like, you don't see any team in the major leagues playing 7 games in 3 days. So it can get a little bit unhealthy. So I think, like, if you want to play at a higher level, once they're done with Little League, I certainly understand that. But if you can find a travel organization that does have a league structure that they play in with playoffs, and then maybe after that's over, they go and play a couple of tournaments, or they mix in a tournament or two at the beginning part of the season, something like that, I tend to think that that's a great structure. I'm not familiar. I know there's some organizations out there that do it, but I'm not 100% sure how many do. We did not play for one that did that. It was all tournaments. And that's why I always say it's not travel baseball, it's tournament baseball. I still say that. Find a program that values development over wins. You know, if you're just totally focused on winning these tournaments and winning these, you know, game after game after game, at some point you realize, and the parents can't see it till it's too late, that the kid's not really developing. And I think that's very common in travel ball, that the organization is not just making those little changes that you want to see in your kid. I mean, you shouldn't have to do it yourself as a parent, especially if you're paying that kind of money. So you really want to find a program that is getting proper practice time is properly developing your player. Last thing, and this is the worst, man. This is the worst. The fear of missing out. Every parent feels it. It's the hardest thing to fight. The FOMO. It's by far, I mean, it's what it all comes down to. I mean, it is why parents are worried that one kid's going to get the leg up on them. You know, another kid's going to get the leg up on their athlete because they played for X team, or they went to a certain pitching coach, or they got further developed because they, you know, went to a certain hitting instructor or whatever it is. It's nonsense. All right, like if your kid's putting in the work at those younger years, if you're a dad that's out there, dad or mom or dad that's out there playing catch with them constantly, you know, taking them to the cages, getting them their swings in, doing those things, it's fine. One kid's not going to be a pro hitter because he went to some special instructor when he was 9 years old. Just because other kids are playing travel does not mean that you need to be. I would tell you with 100% confidence, I saw kids that I coached in Little League that were just so naturally athletic and mature that they would have just been better than a kid no matter how many instructors he had or how much time he had in a special league with special instruction or a hitting coach or whatever it might be. So don't give into that pressure. And the fear of missing out is the problem with almost all sports, all travel sports across the board right now. It's like, well, if Timmy's doing that, then Johnny's got to do this because that's the only way he's going to keep up. It's really not true. Each kid develops differently. You just don't need to be putting them through that pressure cooker and putting that much strain on their arm and things like that by playing 60 games a year when the kid's 9, 10U, 11U, whatever you want to say. So don't give in to the fear of missing out. You know, good parents have their kids in a lot of activities. They got them in a lot of different sports. And just stick with that. Just let your kid play different sports every year. If they only like baseball, be a little cautious of overload so they don't get burned out. You know, try to make sure that they have some other interests. If it's not in athletics, whatever it might be. You just don't want your kid, because he wanted to specialize in baseball when he's 11 years old. That can be too much. That can be too much of one thing. And then when it comes time to really play that sport and really excel at it, when they're 16, 17, their bodies are finally maturing and, you know, they're not interested in it anymore. And that's not what you want. You want them to stick with the sport as long as possible. So those are my thoughts there. I hope you enjoyed those. Again, I got so many. I can go on about travel, baseball, and travel sports forever. I won't torture you guys with that, but that was my breakdown of the teams, and that was a little bit of advice that I have for parents who got some of the younger guys coming up. I will give one closing thought here, because I like to bring hip-hop to the show once in a while. Eminem dropped a new album. Eminem albums are controversial. This was his best in a while, but it's very controversial. For the ones that I'm talking about with young kids playing baseball, do not let them listen to this. But for people that are hip-hop heads, you know, like myself, it's kind of funny, because with what's happening in today's world where so many people get canceled, he's essentially trying to cancel himself. That's kind of the purpose of the album, where he's trying to cancel himself, and it's Marshall Mathers, his the real version of him, versus his alter ego Slim Shady, who is basically trying. So the album's got kind of a storyline. So that's a little old school, where you have a storyline, you follow it through an album. That's what makes for a strong album. But I'm calling them albums, so you can age me a little bit. But the second half of M's career really has had a lot of these comeback style songs, and I will say that songs like Lose Yourself, Cinderella Man, these types of almost like workout slash, you know, bottom to the top type of songs have really done well for him. And the best track on this album is a song called Toby. If you like hip-hop, if you like Eminem, check out Toby. He closes the song in true fashion, in true Eminem style, and it's really awesome. You got to check that one out. So I've had Toby, you know, going at the gym. I've had Toby on repeat. I love that song, and I always bring a little bit of music into this pod. So that is going to be it for tonight. On the next show, I think we're going to start a little bit of fantasy draft stuff. We want to get Uncle Clint in here. He's got some good stuff for us. We want to talk about the Netflix receiver show in a little bit more depth. I am also, now that baseball season is over, I'm going to talk to Caden, and I'm going to give a little closing piece about his season this year. But I want to talk to him first before I put it out on the pod. But we had an interesting travel baseball season that I want to elaborate on a little bit on the pod and talk about his game and so forth. So that should be fun. But again, I got to talk to him first before I put that out. But we got some cool stuff coming. There's a lot of stuff going on in the sports world, even though it's quiet with the action because the NFL hasn't started yet. The major leagues are just kind of going up towards the playoffs, so it's kind of a dead season there. But we got some cool stuff going on with these shows that we're talking about. Hopefully the Cubs stay going here, and we're talking about winning series. And by the next time we come at you, we hope that they've won at least two more series in a row. We're excited to talk about that. We're hoping that this pod, going through September here, can continue to feature the Cubs. If it doesn't, then we're going to be talking about a lot of other things, because if the Cubs are down, we're not going to focus on them, because we're going to be too upset to talk about a team who did not meet expectations this year. They still have a chance. They're not out of the woods, or they're not out of it yet. We're going to be pulling for them. We're not giving up. So thank you guys so much for listening to the pod. We appreciate you very much. Remember to like us and follow us on Spotify, Apple, wherever you get your pods. We appreciate it very much. You guys have a great night.